Morning, Mr. Gardner.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Bruce E. Gardner, and I represent the appellate taxpayer Thomas J. Woody, who was doing business as Value Property Investments during the 2004 tax year. VPI deducted business expenses on Schedule C that were disallowed by the Internal Revenue Service on only two bases. One, that the expenses were not substantiated, and two, because they weren't substantiated, the IRS could not determine whether they were ordinary and necessary business expenses. So the issue here is whether the taxpayer can deduct the business expenses claimed on the 2004 tax return. The record will show that the petitioner and the service stipulated that all the Schedule C expenses had been substantiated. Internal Revenue Code Section 7491A would then place the burden upon the IRS to determine whether the expenses were ordinary and necessary. The IRS did not present any evidence in trial to dispute that the expenses were ordinary and necessary. Accordingly,
IRS position was that there was no business at that time to which they were ordinary and necessary. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. In their answer, they affirmatively pled that the business didn't exist until after the expenses were incurred. However, the burden of proof would still be on the IRS, since they affirmatively raised that issue in their answer, to prove that the taxpayer was not in business, and they produced no evidence regarding that.
But the IRS said that it doesn't make it, that the record is, everybody, there's no disagreement about the record. So the burden of proof, they said, is irrelevant. The question is, what are the consequences of the facts that are in the record?
I believe that's what the tax court judge indicated, that the burden of proof was irrelevant. If this court is of the opinion that the burden of proof is in fact on the taxpayer to demonstrate that he was in a trade of business, I believe the record is pretty clear that the taxpayer has demonstrated that he was in a trade of business. The taxpayer entered into a valid contractual agreement in New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey, for property on Bradley Avenue. That particular contract had a contingency clause in it, which allowed the parties, or allowed the taxpayer, at least, to get out of the contract if, in fact, the owner of the property did not satisfy any deficiencies based on an inspection that occurred. The contract was entered into on about May 10th of 2004. The taxpayer had obtained financing. He had hired a inspector to actually inspect the property.
Did he ever own the property?
Say again, Your Honor?
He never owned the property.
No, he did not own
the property. Isn't that the IRS's point?
Well,
since he didn't own it, he couldn't rent it.
He didn't own the property, but he did have a contract. It was a duplex. Right. And one side was vacant, and the other side was already rented. The taxpayer, in fact, had a contract or a lease for the unrented property in the event that he actually acquired the property. And he, in fact, talked with the tenant who was in the occupied property to actually get him to more or less sign up if, in fact, the taxpayer acquired the property. But there was a valid contract that existed between the two parties, and there was additional activities, business activities, in order to solidify that. The record will show that the taxpayer traveled up to New Jersey on at least five different occasions. Negotiations occurred from the period of May 10th to about July of that year before they eventually broke down. Now, the taxpayer eventually did purchase property at the end of the year, and the same type of efforts that he used to attempt to acquire the Bradley Avenue property were used to, in fact, acquire the Randolph property.
Isn't there a difference between startup cost and ordinary and necessary businesses for tax purposes? Necessary expense of business for tax purposes?
Yes, there are differences between.
And the ruling here is that these were not ordinary and necessary because they preceded the actual start of the business. So they're not ordinary and necessary expenses of the business. Is that not what the ruling is that we're reviewing?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And is that not all consistent with the record? How can we, what standard are we applying to saying that the tax court judge erred if we rule against you here?
Well, we would look at the facts and circumstances test that the U.S. Supreme Court has set down in Gozinger, which is that you look for the profitability motive, you look for the regularity in the activities, you look for the continuity, and this was, in fact, not a hobby. We also would rely on the Seventh Circuit's opinion in Cabin Taxi, in which there was no sale or other revenue. There was an agreement between the parties.
You see, that I think the IRS's view about that is that this case would be like Cabin Taxi if the taxpayer here actually owned the Bradley Street property and then could rent it. But the situation in this case is if in Cabin Taxi it was pre-signing the contract with the German company. In which case, I think in that case, everybody agreed the expenses wouldn't be deductible.
Well, part of the expenses weren't deductible in Cabin Taxi, but I believe part of the expenses, in fact, were deductible in that. The expenses after the signing distribution agreement
Correct.
Occurred.
Afterwards, right.
Right, and
the
here we have...
The comparable date here is after the comparable date here did not occur during the tax year. Because he never purchased a property.
Right, he never
purchased... Isn't that their position?
That's the IRS's position, that he never purchased a property, right. And he never earned any income during that...
And so it's like the period of time in Cabin Taxi when they were negotiating the agreement with the German company before they signed it.
Well, we look at that a little bit differently, Your Honor. We look at it from the point that the agreement actually was in effect, and we also look at Cabin Taxi for the principle of the activity, the distinction between the business activity and the confusion that the lower court had in that case of the purpose of the activity. And here, the business activity is clear. I mean, including the U.S. Small Business Administration recognized that the taxpayer was in business. The IRS commissioner originally recognized the taxpayer in business when, in fact, they issued the notice of deficiency. There was no challenge in the notice of the deficiency as to whether the taxpayer was in business, just that he hadn't substantiated his expenses. I reserve the rest of my time.
Seeing no questions, we'll hear from the appellee.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, I'm Regina Moriarty, and I represent the Commissioner of Internal Revenue.
Morning, counsel.
The notice of deficiency in this case set forth two reasons for denying the claimed expenses by Mr. Woody. The first was that they hadn't shown that they were paid or incurred. And the second was that they weren't ordinary and necessary to his business. In order for an expense to be deductible under Section 162, the expense must relate to a business that is functioning, a going concern, at the time the expenses are incurred, whereas startup costs are costs which are incurred subsequent to the decision to enter into a business but prior to its actual operations. I think the record in this case clearly shows that until Mr. Woody had a piece of property that he could rent, he couldn't be in an active trader business as described in his own business plan. It seems to me from your questions a moment ago that you are pretty clear on understanding that. It's, you need more than a desire to enter into a business to be actively engaged in that. Let's see. Opposing counsel's claim that the entry into or the signing of a contract to buy the Bradley Avenue property was enough for him to be engaged in an active trader business. That contract was contingent. The property was never purchased, so that can't be sufficient. And the fact that he had a potential renter for that property also, the courts have held that a lease agreement, that securing a tenant before you actually own the property, is not sufficient to indicate the start of a business. If the court has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I don't feel like you want me to just repeat stuff that's in my brief.
See any questions from my colleagues, and I don't have any, so thank you, counsel.
And we'd ask that the case be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay, you have 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The tax court relied on the case of McManus versus Commissioner, which set out a three-tier test to determine whether business activity existed. The taxpayer has to undertake an activity intending to make a profit, which Mr. Woody had done in this case, and the tax court agreed. The taxpayer must be regularly and actively involved in the activity, which it's agreed that he was, the 800 hours that he spent in the business. The tax court had an issue with the actual commencement of the business operation. That's the issue of first impression for this court. The facts and circumstances, when you look at the facts, when you look at the fact that the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, in his notice of deficiency, which is a final determination of the IRS, did not dispute whether the taxpayer was in business. The only reason that the...
Well, the freight, do you have the words in front of you that the Commissioner actually used?
Yes, I do.
Would you read them, please, counsel? Isn't it to the effect you did not establish that the business expense shown on your tax return was paid or incurred during the taxable year and that the expense was ordinary and necessary to your business? Was that not the language that was used by the Commission?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Would that language not encompass the showing that the IRS now says was lacking? That is, you don't show it's ordinary and necessary to a business if the business hasn't started.
Right, but the IRS...
The position they're taking now is not inconsistent with the prior notice. It's simply more focused, right?
But if the IRS wanted to allege a startup expenses, as in other cases, they would have specifically stated Section 195, which is the startup expense section.
They did once it became a disputed case, but they used boilerplate language in the initial notice. Isn't that all that happened here?
Well, the notice is to give the other side notice of what the issues are, Your Honor. And in the Weaver case, the court had indicated that if the IRS wanted to specifically state that something was a startup expense, it would.
Just at like, what stage did that occur in the Weaver case? What document was the court referring to there?
The court was referring to the notice of deficiency, I believe, Your Honor.
Okay.
And If the commissioner, for example, wanted to say that this was a hobby, they could have alleged 169, 167, but they didn't.
We have taken you beyond your time now, so unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll take recess. Case is submitted. Thank you.
Thank you.